Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. Big Jim and Goody are with me as usual. We've got a full debrief on the Champions Cup quarterfinal action coming up, together with a little bit of Lions chat, and we're joined by none other than the Six Nations Player of the Championship, Hamish Watson, as well.
Ooh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead, sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Well, usually I'd start by asking how your week's been, boys, but no doubt you both got some thoughts that you'd like to share on Prince Philip today.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, firstly, 99, 11 innings. What an absolute legend. I met him once, Prince Philip. He looked at me once. I looked at him at Tins' wedding in 2011, Goody. And I remember just looking at him and the whole royal family, obviously in awe. I didn't know I was a royalist until I was at Tins' wedding, and I couldn't stop looking at them and fanboying over them. And I just remember the speeches going on. Ian Bolshaw was best man doing the speech.
With half his face missing as well, because he fell off a scooter a few days before.
Exactly, yeah. And I just remember looking at Prince Philip, like, I'm thinking, because it was a pretty loose speech, and Prince Philip was just sat there with a massive smile on his face. I remember saying to Tins, I was like, mate, Prince Philip was absolutely loving the speeches. He said he probably didn't have a clue what was going on. He's nearly deaf in both of his ears, he says, but he just absolutely loves it. He just loves everyone being together and all the lads. But yeah, our thoughts are obviously with everyone. Goody, I know you're a royalist, probably more so than me, but Prince Philip, what a legend.
Yeah, it's massively sad. You hear the outpouring of emotion around the world, not only in Britain, but from all the people that he's touched, and obviously the family as well. And we know a few of them, obviously, you know, it's Zara's granddad. So it's exceptionally sad, but yeah, you just see some of the things that go around, and you remember the impact that he's had, and you know, the service that he's given our country. It's phenomenal. So yeah, hell of an innings. I remember the wedding as well, and I remember him walking past you, Jim, and he said that your kilt looked like his curtains back home at Buckingham Palace. So he had a great sense of humour, and so a lot of people will attest to that. So yeah, massive shame, and you know, everyone's paying their respects in a rightful way, and you know, our thoughts with everyone in the family and that's been affected by it around the world.
Have you managed to get out and about in the sunshine this week?
I have, actually.
Have you, James?
You know what? I don't know whether the millions of people out there know this. I'm an animal lover. I like animals, right? I like safaris, game reserves in South Africa. I'm not a fan of zoos. I put that on Twitter once, and it didn't get a great response off that because of the good stuff that some of the zoos do. But anyway, my point being, I've been out there in the open countryside over the last week with the kids. It's lambing season, right? So I'll tell you what, some really interesting shit that I didn't know. I didn't know that lambs could be born as triplets. I didn't know one sheep could give birth to three lambs. Apparently they can. They did. I saw it. We were there. Kids were involved.
You didn't think that was possible?
I didn't think that was possible, no. I thought two was kind of the most, and if there was triplet, it was a rarity.
Okay.
Well, twins is even more common than just not having twins, just a single lamb.
Well, there you go. A Kiwi knows. I didn't know any of this as much.
Trust me, a Kiwi knows everything about sheep, doesn't he? Look at him.
Well, let me tell you this. Now, here is a story for you. Talk about the circle of life. So there's a dead lamb, and I'm thinking, okay, it's died because of the cold or whatever. It's obviously been a bit of snow in Scotland this weekend.
Not because of ice.
No dogs are involved. No dogs are involved, but a crow or a bird was involved. So JJ's gone up to it and said, Dad, what's happened? His eyes are missing and his guts are hanging out. And I know it sounds quite you know, it's quite, but it's, this is life, right? This is happening. So my mate, who's the farmer, so from a socially distanced distance, of course, because of the situation we find ourselves in China and all that, he says to me that that lamb has probably didn't even live past 5 minutes. So as soon as it was been born, the crows have come down, eaten his eyes, and then eaten his ass. Imagine having your eyes eaten and then not knowing who's eating your ass, and then you die. Could you imagine that?
What a genuinely thing to say. Imagine having your eyes eaten and then not knowing who's eating your ass. I don't think you're worried about not knowing who's eating your ass. I think you're more worried about your eyes are gone.
But these, this is whatever way you look at it. Now, it might sound, the vulgarities of it, it sounds horrid, but this is happening out there on our doorstep. And I thought, you know what? I know we're having a little bit of a joke about it. You don't want to joke about it, but it is happening. But very educational for the kids. You know, and all the sustainability stuff that's all happening now, and, you know, grow your own, eat your own, share your own. But then if you're sharing it, you're not eating it your own. I don't really get it. But just do it on your own, basically. And that's what we're out there showing the kids. And I was horrified, but they were quite intrigued by the circle of life.
Lovely, James. Lovely. Well, I said to the missus about 20 minutes ago, we put the kids to bed, looked at her and said, we've made it. We have made it, love. And she's like, what are you on about? I said, we've made it through another lockdown. The pubs are opening. Next weekend, when the nanny's not here, we can go to the farm, we can go to the zoo, we can go wherever people want to go. It's been tough for families.
You've got two nannies. Would you say the last year's been tough for you or not?
It's been tough for everyone in their own different ways. It's been tough. All I'm saying, and I say it every week, I love the nanny. Amanda, you are a godsend to us. But Friday, Saturday, Sundays, batten down the hatches with the twins. The missus, like, we turn her hair out. What can we do? Oh, we can go for a walk. I can't walk because I'm on crutches. So she's even more raging with me than normal. But we've managed to get through because the boozers are open. All I'm saying, I'm going to sit and I don't care what the weather's like tomorrow. There's a boozer at the top of my road. I have booked a table to sit on my own. I don't care. I'll socially distance from anyone, but I'll be there in shorts and t-shirt, me flip-flops. It could be snowing tomorrow.
You'll be with me because I'm walking now. I'm leaving now. Am I allowed?
I'll be there with a pint of Guinness and blackcurrant in my hand. And can you wait for it?
Well, at least we had some rugby to keep us company throughout the lockdown. And it always looked like the pick of the quarterfinals. The game at Sandy Park didn't disappoint either, did it?
It didn't. And you look at all four quarterfinals, Saturdays were brilliant. Sundays,
abysmal. Absolutely abysmal.
Just blame the French. But yeah, let's start off at Sandy Park then, because that was a phenomenal game, wasn't it? Both sides going at each other, hammer and tongs. Exeter going to a 14-0 lead. Some horrific refereeing decisions come out for both teams. Loads of points to debate around the tackle and Johnny Hill and Yanis Kirsten in the second half. But the better team won in the end. Exeter haven't been playing as well as they did last year. Obviously, last weekend against Lyon, they made quite a few errors, but their class and power game got them through in the end. But they've come up against a champion team and you know, Leinster are a champion team. You look at the squad they've got, and we've had Lanny on here and, you know, numerous other players that have been and are in that Leinster setup. You know, Sexton goes off early, and I'm sure Jim will make the point that it's probably time for him to retire. Jim, why are you being horrible? Byrne comes on and he's phenomenal. Exeter will be a bit disappointed within themselves, though. Credit Leinster, they deserve to win. But Exeter will look back on it, and I hate to say it, Jim, he's a friend of the show, he's a top bloke, he's a brilliant player. Hoggy's had a bit of a mare for two of their tries.
Where? Tell me. I didn't see the defensive stuff.
He missed a tackle on Lama's try.
Oh yeah, okay. But I don't think missing a tackle, though, is... People miss tackles, don't they? You miss a tackle.
I'm not pinning any blame solely on him. On the day, Leinster were better, but Exeter will look back on it with a couple of things where they think, if we'd have been just a bit better in those few moments, you know, the result could have been different. And there was one in the first half as well when Keenan gets the offload away around the back of Hoggy's back. Your second man into the tackle, you've got to go and end it and prevent the offload as well. James Lowe scores off that. And then the second try comes from a line out from a penalty that Matthew Raynell's had an absolute mare. It was never a penalty to Leinster. They came in at the side. Someone's gone off their feet. There's hands on the floor all over the place. Anyway, Leinster get the penalty, kick it into the 22. They play a lovely move off the line out. And Hoggy just gets caught a little bit too tight and Lama scores in the corner. So just like, and it's knockout rugby. Quarterfinals, semi-finals, whatever it is of Champions Cup, sometimes it's the minute details that are the difference between winning and losing games. And unfortunately, Exeter off the pace.
Slightly. Well, you mentioned that. You mentioned last week, because I actually went back because I couldn't remember what we'd picked. So I was thinking, who am I supporting here? Because I can't remember who I picked. So I went back and looked through who picked who. You went for Exeter and I went for Leinster. But I mean, I was on an R in, of course it was. I was on the fence. But
You said Exeter.
No, I said Leinster. Did you? I promise. Yeah, I went back and listened to it. You went for Exeter, I went for Leinster. But the comments you made around Exeter were right. They've not been the same team. And we spoke about Leinster missing the game against Toulon the week before. So how would they be? But mate, they were brilliant, weren't they? Some standout performance in that Leinster team. Josh van der Fleer in the back row. Reece Ruddock as well. I mean, the whole pack was phenomenal, really.
Yeah.
Henshaw in the centre. James Lowe, who arguably didn't play amazing for Ireland in the Six Nations defensively.
Big Dev,
I thought, played really well. You know, bringing on Ryan Beard again. Maybe that...
He's good, isn't he?
I'll tell you now, he's going to be the best out of all of them.
Better than James Ryan?
I think so, yes.
Because he nicked a crucial line out as well, didn't he? Which led to Lama's try in the second half. 5 metres out from Exeter's line.
Yeah, he effectively, against Scotland as well, got the charge down on Ali Price, and then Henderson got the turnover, and that was all she wrote. But to be 14-0 down and to come back, you know, you're thinking around the Saracens game we spoke about last week, could they be in a situation like that this time round? But no, I thought they were very, very good. And I'm sure we'll talk about it. Z-Ref.
Oh, you guys both tweeted about Johnny Hill's tackle. Do you guys want to give your thoughts on whether or not that should have been a card?
Oh, whether or not I personally think it should have been a card, it doesn't really matter what I think personally anymore. Professionally, and we can probably talk about it more, Goody, because there's loads of instances over the weekend, something's clearly happened within the referees' WhatsApp chat where they've said, look, let's try not to card people this weekend, please, and not be the talk of the town. But Johnny Hill's, for me, was a definite yellow, minimum.
Did they say that there wasn't much force, though? And this is the thing, it's, you know, when he first makes contact, it looks like a dream tackle because he smashed him below the head and neckline. It is borderline, but it's perfectly legal. But then it's the follow-through of his arm, isn't it, that catches him in the mush. So that's where the debate lies, whether there's contact in the head. I didn't think it was a red card at all.
It would have been a red card a few months ago, even last week or the week before. I think that would have been given as a red card. Kirsten's definitely would have been a red card. But Johnny Hill's, he's got to be careful. One thing on Johnny, he's boycotted the podcast for whatever reason. He's mates with all the England lads. He must be best mates with, I don't know, Ford and Rob Shaw and all these other people that Goody calls out.
But I think it's you, mate. It's you.
Oh, okay, blame
Faz,
me.
Mate, Faz doesn't like you and he's told the boys not to come on the podcast.
I've put Faz as the captain of the Lions, but Johnny Hill, I actually think he looks bigger, more athletic than he did for England. I don't know how he's put on so much weight. Anyway, that was maybe because I just saw him in slow-mo, but he's just got to be a little bit careful, hasn't he? Because that's one, like Kirsten comes on, he's flying out the line, puts a massive shot in, he's out of control, and there's loads of them at the weekend. I think for me, watching it now, there's a frustration, is like, why are you doing that? Why are you putting yourself at risk?
That's the big thing, isn't it? It's changing the behaviour. And the reason, part of the reason for World Rugby to make these changes is the fact that defences have had the upper hand for quite some time, and allowing teams to fly off the line uncontrolled and go and belt people. And now you've got to be controlled in contact. So yeah, massive, massive question marks around it. You know, it didn't affect the game really, did it? Because Leinster went on to win. Leinster were superb. The only thing for Exeter for me is 9 points down, Stu Townsend, you've got the easiest kickable penalty with 10 minutes to go.
Tap and go.
No, don't tap and go, son. Take the easy three, bring it back to six, and then you've got 8 minutes. That changes actually how Leinster can defend, because it's a one-score game. And we all know now that, you know, giving penalties away, you can give penalties away and the game can keep going to the 90th minute if you want to, but I just keep kicking it to touch. So that was a bit of a brain freeze from Exeter. Stu Townsend, yeah, pretty disappointed with himself, I'm sure. And Rob Baxter alluded to it, didn't he? Going off script a bit. But sometimes pressure that the opposition have put on you, and Leinster champion team put Exeter under the pump. The breakdown was where they dominated as well, wasn't it?
Well, they made a thing, a talk on comms, didn't they, Goody, about, you know, and Tim will know more, producer Tim, because he does all the stats, that Exeter don't compete that much at the breakdown, whereas Leinster always go hard. You know, whoever's playing for them, Furlong, Porter, obviously, all of the back row. So, that's the French referees allow contest. You can be on your elbows, you can be on your edge, you can be on your arse, and you can still compete for ball. So, like, if you're Leinster, you're well happy going into that game, but Exeter, they don't compete.
You touched on Robbie Henshaw before, Jim. surely the starting Lions spot is now.
Well, what I should say about Robbie Henshaw, and again, I don't want to categorise lads that need haircuts and don't need haircuts or do their own haircut. It is a haircut. So he desperately is a haircut, especially before the Lions photos get taken. I don't know when they get taken, but I imagine hairdressers might be open outdoors, indoors, different in Ireland. But he's a fantastic player, that is for sure. He was class for Ireland. He's physical. He doesn't look that big. And I judge a man by his arms.
Mate, he is, mate.
But he doesn't, like, on, and I spoke to Ravo's arm about Victor Vito from La Rochelle. He's like, oh, slug, I walked past him in the corridor. He's massive. I was like, mate, you've got a full-on dad body. He obviously looks big. But you look at, like, Will Skelton for La Rochelle looks huge. You know, yeah. James Ryan, Reese Ruddock look massive. Tag Furlong. But for me, I don't, is Henshaw that big? What was he, 90 kgs, 95?
Let's Google it, shall we?
He ain't 100 kgs.
He's 6'2", 6'3". Let's see what weight they put him down as, because obviously that's never true, because I was always down as about 90 kilos. It says 99 on Wikipedia, so you can always add 5 or 6 onto that, trust me. And this is the big thing. There's all this Lions debate going on at the minute around who should be in, who's not going to be in. We did our own test teams 2 weeks ago, but if you're picking the here and now, 100% Henshaw's starting in the centres. And the beauty of Henshaw is he can play 12 and 13, but there's so much water to go under the bridge between then. We've still got another 4 or so weeks till the squad gets announced. And then, mate, the Lions tour is still a long way away. And what did you tweet? It's going on in Dubai or something, Jim?
Yeah, I had a few gin and tonics again. I don't know why. My fingers just start getting a bit fiddly. I've heard rumours again that there's talk of that. But anyway, tell the eat that. If it's in Dubai, as much as I love going to Dubai, I can't see me going in June or July where it's 65 degrees.
I can't see it being played there either.
There's no English teams in the semi-finals of the Champions Cup either. After Sale, well beaten by La Rochelle. They look a bit tired after the 6-day turnaround, do you think?
I feel awful. Faf got taken off at 60 minutes, and I'm thinking as he's walking off, is he blaming us? That's what I'm thinking.
I don't think he is, Jim. I don't think he is.
No, he's not. No, he's not. He's blaming the physicality and the size of La Rochelle.
6-day turnaround in knockout rugby is crazy. La Rochelle played Gloucester on the Friday night, didn't they, of the last 16 game. And then you've got Sale going to Scarlets on the Sunday. So effectively, La Rochelle going back home, they've had an 8-day turnaround. Sale have had a 6-day turnaround. They've got to get home from Scarlets. I know, you know that's not a big thing, but you lose a day's training. You've also got your travel to France involved as well. So for them to have a 6-day turnaround, I thought was horrific. But you look at the game and you look at the class and power and everything that La Rochelle had, I think they're always going to win that game. Again, a couple of points that Sale will learn from. And Alex Anderson said this, they'll learn from their mistakes in this game. You know, the try just after half, the 10 minutes after the half-time were crucial. The try that Raymond Rule scored off the back of the line-out, and if you want to get into the nitty-gritty of defending the tail of a line-out, Curry has gone inside McGinty. They're trying to get some line speed. They're flown off the line. Curry's got left behind slightly. He's overchased. La Rochelle are only attacking with their back line. They haven't gone to a six-man line-out. And then to get beaten on the inside at the back of a line-out, when you've got no tail gunner off the back of the line-out, Curry's got left behind, then over chases to get to Ehire West when there's the inside ball to Raymond Rule. Then he finishes pure class. So that was one error, and then Hammersley's error as well. 2 tries in 10 minutes. You know, La Rochelle, once they got a 14-point lead, there was no way that Sale were going to come back from that. So, you know, Sale have done exceptionally well, and it's like anything. It's a growth stage, isn't it? Alex Anderson knows that from his time at Saracens. They lost plenty of sort of knockout games until they got that dominance in the competition. Everyone's done it. Sale are a team that are coming through, and they're going to be here for a few years with, you know, the structures they've got in place at the club, the head coach, the players, etc. And they'll learn from that, and, you know, hopefully we'll bounce back better for it next year. But La Rochelle, a proper team, proper power, unbelievable players, you know, in key positions. Victor Vito, absolutely redonkulous offload.
That offload was redonkulous.
Yeah. Did you have that in your locker?
Well, I had it in the locker, but I never opened the locker. So I wouldn't, if I was Gregory Audrey or Ori, it would have probably come off my head as well, because I wouldn't expect anyone to have that in the locker. Yeah, I think Goody, you're right. 6-day turnaround was always going to be tough. La Rochelle, mate, they're actually better than I thought. I don't know. I've not watched much of the top 14, but you look at the profile of the team. Obviously, O'Gara, Jonah Gibbs as well, involved in that setup. And you look at the other French teams who didn't play that well this week and that we can talk about. But we had Faf on last week. We know my love affair with Al Sanderson and our love of Sale as well. It's fair play to them. They've made a real statement and they've actually shown what the future can be like for them. And you look at the the backbone of that team, the quality that they've got. I think next year in Europe could be huge for them. But 6-day turnaround to then go to La Rochelle is always going to be tough.
Well, we can have a bit of a break now from the Champions Cup action and have a chat to the man who was named Six Nations Player of the Championship a week or so ago. Hamish Watson joins us. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hamish, it's great to have you on. Now, I don't want to be calling you out as a big timer, but I did say on the phone to you, if this was 2015, you would have wanted to come on every single week. We missed you last week. We had to get another man with a great lid in Faf de Klerk. It's great to have you, but do you want to explain to the millions? They might know if they watch hashtag Always Edinburgh, they might not know, but why you boycotted us last week?
I think you mentioned it, but I got I got asked to come on by you guys, obviously, and I was very grateful for it, but it was it just happened. It was before the Racing game, and obviously the Racing game didn't go too well for me and my fellow Gunners. So I didn't think it was appropriate for me to come on the pod and talk rugby and chat rugby when we'd just been battered by Racing. So we've gone for it this week and I'm happy to be on, and it's 11 o'clock at night. Excited to be here, guys.
Well, mate, listening to you is great. It's great having you on. And I forgive you for last week because I understand Cockers is an angry little man. Perhaps you can't say that. But yeah, taking a good hide-in over in Racing probably wasn't the best thing. But I actually can't understand what you're saying. That Scottish accent is coming through like you wouldn't believe. You know, born in Manchester. That's in Scotland somewhere as well, isn't it? You know, Leicester Tigers Academy.
It's on the borders, mate.
Leicester Tigers Academy. You should have played for England, pal. You're the best player in the Six Nations, but you're English.
No. No, I'm not. No, I obviously get the accent thing a lot, but I followed my superstar. I went a similar route to him, Big Jim.
Oh, thank you, Mish. I love your hair. Whatever I said. just Mish, tell us a bit about your background then, because people would be intrigued to know, and now you are a worldwide, wide household name in rugby, and fully deservedly so. But a lot of people kind of put Scots who don't have Scottish accents, because it is a thing, oh, he's not Scottish. Hamish Watson, arguably the most Scottish name you can get. But maybe just give us a bit of your backstory about how you've evolved to become the Guinness Six Nations player of the tournament.
Yeah, so I think most people may know I'm obviously not born in Scotland, so I've got a Scottish grandparent on both sides of the family, and my dad was always a Scotland fan. So when I was being brought up in England, down south in Manchester, in my family anyway, I followed what my dad was doing, and my dad was a big Scotland rugby fan, so that's what I did. I just followed what he did, I guess, and got taken to Murrayfield at a young age and stuff like that, and have always sort of grown up supporting Scotland, and tried to get done the Scottish Exiles stuff at a young age, and I think I tried to get into Scotland under 18s. I actually didn't get in.
Too small,
yeah. And then under 19s, actually, I probably was too small back then. I was probably 85 kilos back then, under 18s, and then under 19s, got to finally play for Scotland. That was my first A grade cap, and then went to Tigers Academy. So I did that at school, went to Tigers Academy, and that's all. I obviously only did a year there, but I was really grateful for my time there, because when you get a big name like Tigers Academy behind you, I think that sort of helped me get into the Scotland 20s and get into the World Cups, the Junior World Cup squad for Scotland. Didn't get kept on there, and I've sort of got offered a great opportunity on the back of the Junior World Cup to go do a sevens and academy contract up in Edinburgh, which was great.
And you said you followed Jim's pathway. I see it completely differently. You've chosen to play for Scotland because of your heritage. Even though you were down at Leicester and the academy there, you always wanted to play for Scotland. The difference is with Jim. Jim had a rose tattoo on his arse, and he just didn't want to play for Scotland. He wanted to play for England. He just wasn't good enough.
It was under my arm. It was a rose. It was a rose thistle tulip on my arm. So let's get the details right.
It's great to have you on, though. And let's go back to the Six Nations. What a performance! First and foremost, let's just go to the big game when you had England's pants down at Twickenham. And I can say that as a proud Englishman. It's been a long time coming, I think, for a lot of Scottish people. But that day and how the Six Nations started for you and the team especially, couldn't have gone any better. It was pure dominance in that game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an amazing game. We went down there believing we could beat England. I think it's been something like 38 years since we had won there. So that's it's ridiculous when you think about it. We had some of the guys on. We did like a weekly thing with Scotland where we'd get old players on Zoom and stuff. And we had a few of the guys on who won it in the 38 years ago, the last team to win it. And it's ridiculous to think that we haven't won it since then. So it was a great performance by us, and it was an amazing game. It was probably the best game of our tournament, which was a shame because it was our first game. It was a great day for everyone and the coaches and everyone back home as well. It's been a tough year for everyone, and I think when you saw some of the fan reactions going around on Twitter and like some of the kids' reactions and stuff like that, it was a great day and a really proud day for all the fans and the players.
What's been the shift, Hamish, in this Scotland squad? I think everyone's seen it. It seems like it's been brewing, and we've said it, since I played 15 years ago or whatever it was. But there's always the talk, isn't there? And we've been in squads together where it's coming, it's building, it's our year. But I think ever since the World Cup, and it wasn't great in Japan, let's be honest, you know, the Ireland game and then obviously the Japan game at the end. But ever since then, there seems to be a real shift. And there seems to be an even bigger shift since last Six Nations, where there was a fallout between Gregor and Finn. I don't expect you to go into detail about that or whatever. It's old news now. But what has the shift been now? We've now got strength and depth. You know, Hoggy's now an established leader. We've now got quality throughout our team. But as a player in the middle of it, have you felt that shift?
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously in 2017 and 2018, those Six Nations games, I think we won 3 out of 5 as well. And we were sort of heading in the right direction. And it seemed like you're saying we were on a good route there. And then we sort of took a big step backwards in 2019, where we didn't do too well in the Six Nations. And then we had a bad World Cup as well. And since then, I think it's just been a big buy-in from all the players. It's a very tight group of boys. I think this COVID year has definitely helped with that sort of stuff as well. Like the bonds are obviously, I always think they're strong in the camp. But as players now, I think we've got such a great group of guys. And I think boys who have come in, take for example, Wilkes, who came in for that last France game, I think he could really feel the difference as well. It's just a very tight group now. And I think it always was, but there's no, you know, you could have one cap or 80 odd caps. It's everyone's sort of on the same level. I think that's a really good place to be in. You spoke about Hoggy there, and Hoggy's been amazing. I think he's obviously, when he first got the captaincy, people didn't know. People are like, oh, he's not very experienced with it or whatever it was. But he's done amazingly well with the captaincy role. And I think it's someone who a lot of the players look up to. And his leadership group as well have been really good. So I think it's just a big buy-in from all the players and the coaches. I think the coaches have been great. You know, you can have a beer with them after the games and you can talk to them about family stuff. And I think that helps as well, because you obviously need to respect your coaches and stuff like that. But you also, I think it's important to be able to switch off with them as well, which sometimes in some other environments that may not happen. I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go back to the Six Nations again then and chat through the Wales game next up for you boys. You know, a bitter pill to swallow a bit, really, with the red card as well for Xander Ferguson, when, you know, you look like you're probably going to win the game. And you got in a bit of trouble for some of the comments you made as well around that. I can't not ask you about it. And I'm glad it brings a smile. I'm glad it brings a smile to your face, because there is so much debate week in, week out, isn't there, at the minute, around the laws and how they're interpreted with clean outs and hits to the head and stuff like that. How do you feel as a player, someone that's physical, someone that's involved in all these breakdowns, someone that didn't give a penalty away in the Six Nations as a back rower, which is absolutely phenomenal.
Flabbergasted.
Unbelievable. How do you feel about the way things are and any comments on that one?
Yeah, I think it's so tough. I mean, like, especially after that Wales incident, you saw in the weeks after that, just red card after red card. And it's so hard, because where after I cooled off from the things I said and I looked at it, obviously by the letter of law, it is a red card. Player safety is the main thing. And obviously Wyn Jones could have been hurt. So I understand that what I said was wrong, and I didn't put it across in the best way. But what I was meaning was, I just think I think you can almost, every other ruck, you could give a red or a yellow card. And that's the problem at the moment with rugby. So yes, by the letter of the law, that's 100% a red card. And the other ones we've seen are probably red cards. But I think sometimes there needs to be a bit of room there. But it's so tough, like you say, because it's all about, you know, the concussions and the stories you're hearing at the moment going around with some ex-rugby players. It is really, they've got to look after the players. So I think it is a red card, but it's a hard one because we all know we've all played rugby and that stuff goes on quite a lot.
And Mish, on that, so, you know, when you're in the change, remember when your vice captain used to speak to the team and I used to basically shout, let's get out there and just fucking smash them, fuck them up. And you're using terminology, right, from the bloody Coliseum where you're going out there to not play rugby. But I think back to how I used to live my life as a young man, as a professional rugby player, and that terminology was being used constantly. Get off the line, fucking smash them, physically impose yourself. You're talking about these violent words. Is it the same now or not? I mean, because, you know, Goody alluded to it, you didn't give away a penalty, and there's a number of players that are extremely physical that are the same. Tipperick's the same, he's a very clean player. You know, there's instances from the weekend as well, but Do you talk in that? I mean, I remember we had a defensive line, and the blitz line, which was to basically get off the line physically, was called kill. Yeah. So we used to scream kill, and we'd be in the line, kill, kill, kill. And you think about it. I mean, is there a shift now in terminology in the way that you speak, you know, you speak about these things?
Well, you'd have been shouting it from the bench, wouldn't you, Jim?
No, it was only on the bench for four times for Scotland when they won.
I think the problem with it, like, you have to, like you say, it's such a physical sport. And if you almost don't go in with your physicality, right, you know, everyone would have had those days where you're not physically at that point that you need to be at to play a game of rugby. And I think that's when you tend to get hurt, if you're not switched on and you haven't brought that sort. So they're probably, the coaches and staff and stuff like that, probably trying to get away from using words like that. But I still think you still need to almost go in with that attitude. You know, it's a physical sport. And at the end of the day, what you're doing can hurt people, even when you do it in the cleanest ways. You know what I mean? So I think it is a tough one. I think you've got to, if you don't go in with the right attitude, you're going to end up getting hurt as well. So it's just trying to keep it as clean as possible. And now there is a lot more coaching, especially towards the back end of this season. And they are saying, like, you need to watch out for this, watch out for even doing a hold up, because you get someone around the neck and it's going to be a card and stuff like that. So I think the coaches are trying to bring it into the game. But like you say, you're doing everything at such a quick tempo that, you know, stuff does go wrong, because if you're not fully committed, then you're going to end up hurting yourself as well. I don't think any player goes in thinking, you know, the ones where they haven't wrapped an arm and they end up hitting them in the head. I don't know, no player's deliberately doing that.
And how hard is it for you as a player, someone that is, you know, at the forefront of most collisions in the game, in changing those behaviours? Because we, you know, Jim and I talk about it on here, it's in the press, the way you see some people still going in upright, trying to smash people up high. Obviously, it's difficult to change behaviours, but you said it then, there's loads of work going in from the coaches. You must have seen a big shift in coaching techniques and training sessions where the focus has changed massively from that choke tackle downwards.
Yeah, well, I think it's really hard. I think for some players, I remember I always used to be a low chop tackler, and then when Alan Solomons and Omar came in, our defence system was all about tackling high, and you all had to tackle high and hold up and slow the ball down by going high. So then to change your attitudes, then you change it back one way, then a new defence coach comes in, and I think that is quite hard. So if players now are with their club team who maybe we're going to choke and we're going to tackle high and slow the ball by doing that instead of jackling, and then they go back to their international setups and give away a few penalties for getting their body shapes wrong or for going too high. I think it is tough. It's tough to change just in a 12 or however long the Six Nations, an 8-week camp. I think that is really tough. So whether you go, all right, well, now you can only tackle below the waist. But then when you actually look at the concussion stats for that, that's normally, or I think there's a higher percentage of people who are getting head knocks from getting their head bashed off a hip or on a kneecap as well. So it's tough, because if you're tackling high, the attacker's at risk. But if you're tackling low, the defender's at a high risk of getting concussed as well. So it's just it's a physical sport, isn't it? And it's just going to be, I think, as long as we're taking the right precautions after someone gets concussed, I think that's the main thing. You know, you do the protocols, you go for all the right things. No one's scared of going to the doctor or their coach now. Listen, I just got a bang on the head. I don't think I'm right. Where I think that's what needs to change, because the game's not going to change. I think, well, hopefully it won't change. You know, it's a physical game, and that's why people love it. So I think as long as the protocols after you're getting head knocks changes, then, which it is, I think that's the way it's going to have to go.
Mesh, it's great to chat to you about these things because they are topical, but they're also quite difficult subject matters to talk about because of everything that's happening at the minute. And I think chatting to you, a player that's at the forefront of everything that's good about rugby, but the physicality as well, it's class to be able to talk to you about that. Let's go on to something positive. Not that that was a negative, but it was quite deep. The game against France in Paris. Now, all I'm thinking, and I forgot about the situation that we were in, was I'm thinking China Whites, VIP, whatever it's called in Paris, where I was with Kanye West having lost 47 points to 5 against France in Paris. But it was under 50, so it felt like a victory. How good was that win? And out of the two, out of the England and the France game, because they were two historic wins for Scotland, which one was the best?
Yeah, it's tough. And like you say, it would have been great to actually go out and celebrate those wins as well with, if we would have been allowed with everyone in town. But it's... yeah, it's tough to say. England was, it's always great beating England. You know what it's like. It's, it's our main rival. And after 2019, that nuts game, that draw, I think winning at Twickenham was a really special moment for all the players. But the France one was great as well. Obviously, I've never won at Stade de France. None of the boys haven't. No one's done it since 99. So that was great as well. But I think for me, the England game.
Yeah, that hurts me to hear that. But yeah, let's talk about how did you find out that you were named the Guinness Player of the Six Nations then? And have you got a lifetime supply of Guinness as the prize? Because it must be, you know, such a high accolade. There's got to be something big in there for the player.
I know. I was waiting for my lifetime supply of Guinness, but no, it hasn't come yet. It's just I found out. Obviously, you got the nominations, and I didn't know about that at all. I just sort of saw it on social media, and I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool!" Like, got nominated for player tournament. There's obviously so many good players who got nominated, so I was like, "Oh, well, it is what it is. It's great to get nominated, but you know, it's down to the fans now. So just see what happens." And then we actually had a team meeting at Edinburgh on the Wednesday, I think it was, and it was getting announced on the Friday, and the media manager at Edinburgh came over to me and said, "Oh, I'm really sorry, mate. We've got a player appearance for you to do." And you know what it's like, you've just finished Six Nations, you've had quite a few player appearances to do over the last 8 weeks. And I was like,
Kitching, yeah.
I was like, Kitching, not in Scotland.
Not in Scotland, mate. Not in Scotland.
You don't know what
not
it's
yet.
Like.
Not yet.
But yeah, so he was like, "Yeah, you got a player appearance to do for BT, or you've got to keep the sponsors happy or something." So I was like, "Yeah, right, okay, no worries." And he was like, "Oh, and can you wear Scotland kit?" So I was like, "All right, okay, yeah, no worries." And then obviously I got on the call that night, and it was just like Hoggy smiling at me. And I was like, "Oh, have you been roped into this as well?" sort of thing. Then Hoggy, it was a complete surprise basically. So they did, I didn't see it coming, and it was a really proud moment for me. And like I said on the Zoom call, it's not about personal stuff, but it's, it was quite cool to get the recognition off the fans as well, because obviously it was voted by the fans, which is really nice.
I can't even imagine what it was like, Hamish, to be honest. But it was greatly deserved, and you probably don't realise as much now. I know you know it's a big accolade, but just imagine, you know, when you retire and you know you're sat in your armchair with your kids, and you can think back to that moment. It's huge, especially like you said, with the quality of players and how good the tournament was as well this year, albeit with no fans. And then off the back of that, and the momentum that gathers, Mish, around a Lions year. And again, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you're obviously not going to say, "No, you don't want to go. You want to go." Of course you want to go. Everyone wants to go. But can you feel the momentum gathering around yourself, apart from Stephen Jones? Who knows what he's talking about in the Times? Wrote an article today saying you're too small, but he said that I should have been a two-time tourist with the British and Irish Lions. So he does know a little bit about what he's talking about.
Mate, he knows enough. What a mug he is. That's clickbait. What a mug.
But Mish, can you feel the momentum gathering? You're obviously on social media. It's a natural thing. You know, you're one of the millennials on there. Your mates and that are into rugby. And if you are feeling the momentum and the kind of heat leading up to the tour, how do you feel about it all?
Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, obviously, Scotland had a great Six Nations, and we sort of said at the start of the tournament as well that I think it was always the thing that Scotland couldn't win away games, and we don't really win much away from home, but we've done pretty well with that. And, you know, we beat Wales in 2020 and then France and England. So I think that's that's helped Scotland fans out, Scotland players out, sorry, a bit. You'd like to think that there'd be more than two players on it back in 2017 anyway. So I think quite a few boys have got, put their hands up and stuff like that. And there's a few boys on form. For me personally, like you say, I think there's obviously a bit of momentum, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter about momentum, because I'm a strong believer that, you know, like someone like Manu should probably go, because I think he's a great player and he's not played for gosh knows when. I don't know the last time he played, but I would have him on the tour. So I don't think momentum's a big thing and form's a big thing, but I don't know. It's up to one man, I guess, and the rest of his coaches. So listen, obviously it would be amazing to go on the Lions tour, but at the same account, I feel like I've sort of played quite well in the Six Nations, and if it doesn't happen, then you know, you're not that his style of player. So obviously it'd be tough to take, but that's it is what it is, I guess, I suppose.
Well, mate, you said it's one man's decision. I don't think it's just one man's decision. And reports that have been leaked.
No, it is. It is. Wig told me in 2013 that only Gatland didn't want to take me. Everyone else wanted me to go. So,
but it might change this year. Yeah, it might change this year, because there's rumours, strong rumours, that Gregor Townsend is going to be the attack coach. So surely if that gets announced on Tuesday, just drop Tooney a text and say, mate, I'm the best player in the Six Nations. I'm in, right?
Yeah, I don't know how much sway Tooney would have, but no, I think it's important to get in 2017. Obviously, I think Gregor may have got asked for a role out there as well, but it was his first year in Scotland stuff, and obviously two guys went on tour that year from the Scotland squad. So I think it helps having a Scotland coach in there who knows all the boys really well, and he can try and fight the corner of some Scotland boys that he thinks good enough. And I think that's great to have. If the rumours are true, to have a Scotland coach in camp.
How has Tooney been? Just seeing his evolution, I think, not just from the way that you lads are playing, but also how he engages with the media and stuff now, the access we're now getting to you lads, and the kind of profile growing around the game in Scotland, which is obviously a big thing, and it's important that that happens. But just a few lines on Tooney, really. I mean, how much he's kind of grown into his role under a load of pressure before the Six Nations, and you know what it's like. You see, you know, more so on the coaches than the players that are under the pressure. But he seems to have now come through that, and he seems to be very happy.
Yeah, I think he's been awesome. Like you say, I think people on TV maybe seeing it as well, but I think definitely there's no doubt about it. He's an amazing coach. And I think when we took over in 2017, everyone knows that. But it was more sometimes our attack stuff that was always really good with Scotland, and sometimes our defence let us down and stuff like that. And I think Tooney with the backroom staff that he has now and his other staff, I think it's a really good blend. And he's a bit better at probably loosening the reins and letting defence have as much time as attack and stuff like that. So I think he's done an amazing job with Scotland, because I remember doing an interview in 2020 when I think we lost our first two games of the Six Nations in 2020, and it was after the World Cup and stuff like that, and everyone was saying, oh, Tooney's not good for the job or whatever. And sport's such a fickle thing. I know that from being a United fan as well, and you know, one minute you're loving players, one minute you're saying they're garbage or whatever, and it's sports like that. And he then went on and won the last three games of 2020 Six Nations, and everyone was like, oh, he's amazing again. And I think all the players can see the difference from 2017 to now as well. I think just like I said earlier about the squad environment and just the buzz in camp, and I think everyone enjoys being in camp. Obviously it was tough being away from our families, but I think it really, we did really create a great environment. That's testament to like Hoggy, the leadership group, and Gregor himself as well. So I think he's been really good.
And Jim, you were one of those guys that was calling for Tooney's head, weren't you, last year?
I don't think I was, no. I thought I wanted to give him another 4 years. But one thing that I did want to talk about when we spoke about Fickle, producer Tim obviously gives us a load of info. We don't need as much when they're friends of the show, like yourself, Hamish. But your second cap for Scotland was against Italy in Turin, and your vice-captain here was playing, and it was my final outing. Yeah.
Is that your last
surely, that was my last. I know, I'm as shocked as you are. I'll be honest, I'm as shocked as you are. That was the warm-up game to the World Cup. Now, I don't know if you can remember your second cap, but can you tell me straight as a mate, how the hell have I not gone to the World Cup having trained how I did in that World Cup in 2015 and having played how I did in Turin? Have you got an answer for me? Because no one's given me one yet.
Tim Swinson, that's all I'm saying.
It's a travesty. All I remember from the 2015 World Cup was you hitting ice buckets over people's heads.
Tipping them. I was tipping them over. Tipping them over people's heads, yeah. What a lad, eh? What a leader.
So Jim, you've been telling us for years how you trained the house down and you were unbelievable in that camp, and all you did wrong was not shake Vern's hand on the breakfast after you'd got your last game in Turin. And Hamish, centre of the mix there, has just said, all I remember from you is just tipping ice buckets on people and whack them on the head with it. I mean, there's the legacy. And killing rabbits. Yeah, there's your legacy, Jim.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about killing rabbits with the SRU. It made the front. That's how, Hamish, if it wasn't for that World Cup in 2015, that training camp, we wouldn't be here now, because we made the front page of the news for a number of reasons off the back of that. So I don't want to open Hamish Watson up. He is a contracted employee of the Scotland Rugby Union. And it was a dark day on the Daily Mail saying Rabbit Gate on the front of there. Hey, it made me famous or infamous, however you look at it.
Yeah, it did. I can't get you on, Hamish, without chatting about your lid, because my lid's made a remarkable recovery from when I played. But we love the mullet. What's the reasoning behind it? Is it to make up for the lack of the Scottish accent? What, you know, a bit of Braveheart in there, or is there a bet going on, or is it just you love the mullet?
You know what? I don't really know. I've always had a bit of a mullet, and it always comes and goes a bit. I think I've been like off and on since like 2013, 2014 with the mullet, which my missus loves. She obviously hates it, but
does she?
Yeah, absolutely hates it, and she she wants it cut ASAP. But yeah, I don't know. It's I just think, you know, I just think everyone would look better with a mullet, you know. I'd be new with a mullet.
I'd look, hey, if he had a skullet, I'd love a mullet.
I look at some people, I think, imagine him with a mullet, he'd look cool. But yeah, it's just one of those things that I had it cut off for my wedding 2 years ago in June 2019, and I haven't had the back cut since. And yeah, it's coming to that time now, though, where it's getting long, and I don't want to trim it, and it's getting long, and I am thinking it's going to have to be soon, but just I just haven't decided when yet.
We'll know you're in trouble with the missus if it all comes off then, because yeah,
exactly.
That'll be your peace offering.
And yeah. Hamish, off the back of that then, your social media has improved significantly. Now you're a superstar, which is great. And I did see on your social that there was some Rex hats being stitched with the mullet logo. Is this correct? And am I having one soon?
What do you think? You like them?
I don't like it, mate. I absolutely love it, I'll be honest. So how is the cap company? Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that and how we can get involved? Because you're wearing a cap for the millions of people listening. It looks very similar to the Rugby Pod logo.
Yeah, that was to give you guys a taste of what we can do for you. We've been trying to get in contact with you for years about doing some caps for you guys.
Now you can. Now you're going to be player of the... Mate, you're in. Whatever you want.
Mate, it's a perfect marriage, isn't it? Because we've just signed an exclusive deal with Spotify. You're the best player in the Guinness Six Nations. And here we go. Let's get the caps out there.
Tell us a little bit about the hat company that is now... You're going to sell millions off the back of this, so you're welcome.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, it's called Rex Club. I own part of the company with my brother and an investor in London. And it's been going for about 8 years now. We do all our own sort of headwear, but we also, our main like target market is team headwear. So we do a lot of the Premiership teams, a lot of the cricket stuff in the summer. And yeah, it's basically, if you have any inquiries, fire them over to Rex Club. My little brother hand stitches them all.
Oh, so that. Sustainable. Sustainability and all that. It's got a story. Love it.
I love it as well, because what he's done there is he's just said, I'll just delegate that to my brothers who are less important than me, but we're all part of the company. So delegation is the key, right?
I tell you what, they actually made, I was there on Friday, and they're the ones who make the company tick. I was trying to make a mullet cap, and took me about 4 hours to make one cap. I'd be sacked in a week.
Well, Hamish, well, thank you very much for coming on the show, mate, and congratulations on winning the Player of the Championship award. And I don't want to jinx it, but best of luck in the red jersey against the Springboks later this year, mate.
Thank you very much, guys, and cheers for having me on.
Thanks, Hamish. Good lad.
Thanks for coming on, mate.
Bye, guys. Take care.
Top lad.
Top lad.
Yeah, mate. What a boy, eh? Honest. You know, what a player during the Six Nations, and you know, loves the crack, love the mullet. He's not scared to give his opinion, which I love. And yeah, I definitely think he's on that Lions tour. You can't not be on the Lions tour, can you, if you've been player of the Six Nations? He's a phenomenal player. Love the mullet. Great bloke.
is a great bloke. He's a proper team man as well. He's a good lad. And he is very humble, but he makes a really interesting point, doesn't he? It's like, we can all talk about who we think and, you know, Owen Farrell, should he be captain? Should he even go? Maratoji, should he be captain?
Why are you trying to get your mates back in here again? You're trying to be friends with them.
It's rhetorical questions.
Hamish is your real mate and he's the best player in the Six Nations.
And he should be captain. But Sam Simmons is the best player in the Premiership and doesn't play for England. So that's my point is, you know, he is right. Like, it comes down to Gatland, doesn't it? So if you think with Hamish, how well he's played and... you think of Stephen Jones's comments or whatever in the Times today. So he's got an opinion, whether or not it's right or wrong, and we're entitled to it, and we don't want to be divisive around it. But Hamish is right, isn't it? So for me, he's guaranteed in the squad, guaranteed, because he's a phenomenal player and what he brings. The big thing will be down to Gatland. Okay, so he's in the squad. You know, is he going to start? If he's going to start, then you look at all the other number sevens. So I personally think Hamish Watson should start, not just because he's a mate of mine, because he's a world-class player now.
Yeah,
but you 100%. Look at the other, you look at the sevens that he's going to be wearing the jersey in front of, like Tipperick, Curry, Underhill, even though he didn't play, obviously, in the Championship.
Navidi can play there.
Van der Fleer, you know, there's so many unbelievable players, and that's probably the point that he's making. If they want, you know, they might want to go for a tall, rangy back row, but... we don't want to jinx him on here. We thought we jinxed Cooney. He was unbelievable at the weekend as well. So maybe it just all comes back round. But it's great to have Hamish on. Big congratulations to him. And we've spoken about it before, Goody, haven't we? We're now opening the doors of Scotland rugby to get lads to come on and be able to chat and be themselves and engage. And maybe some of that's off the back of them winning. Maybe that's off the back of one of their former vice captains on here just trying to grow the game.
They were the dark days, though, Jim. The good days are here for Scotland now.
Oh, they were the horrid days, I'll be honest. They were the days of foundation. You know, the guys who were down there digging the dirt and digging and moving shit, they're the grim days. But look what's been built now. But look what's been built.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You guys mentioned the news about Gregor Townsend potentially going to be Warren Gatland's a tech coach. What did you make of that? What do you guys think of it?
Yeah. If you're not giving it to Eddie Jones to play kick chase, then the right man to get the job is Gregor Townsend. I know he wanted him, and Hamish alluded to it then, didn't he, as well? He was offered the role or a role in the coaching team in 2017. And, you know, obviously didn't take it because it was his first full year with Scotland as the head coach. And yeah, listen, Gregor Townsend, you go back to the 97 Lions tour and people will say, oh, the game's changed or whatever. He was a catalyst in that 97 Lions tour. You now look at him as a coach. We can all see the way Scotland play. Yes, they've got some wonderful attacking threats in Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg, amongst others, but he's an attack-minded coach. So Warren Gatland needs someone like that. And you look at the options. around. So obviously Stephen Jones does it for Wales. You've got Mike Catt over in Ireland, and you've probably got Gregor Townsend as the lead, not only head coach in Scotland, but he runs the attack as well. So it, for me, it makes perfect sense to get Gregor Townsend involved. And I think he'll do a wonderful job, hopefully. And yeah, that might push the Scottish contingency up to about four. I'm joking, Jim. I'm joking.
14. He's ready now. He arguably wasn't ready in 2017. He's a much better coach now, having been through what he's been through, the pressure and stuff and the media spotlight on him. I know, you know, Hamish said it's been a great Six Nations. We still finished fourth, but you look at the performances, I think, is what he's starting to say now. And fair play to Gregor. He's evolved. And like Goody said, it's not a job for boys. It's not a case of Gregor Townsend gets on tour and then, oh, we'll get a load of Scotland lads in. And I think one of the things that we've spoken about and Gatland called me out on is when we said in 2017, where he just, you know, he picked a load of lads that he knew from Wales that were closer to New Zealand than the Scotland lads were wherever they were playing, even though they were in the Southern Fiji. Hemisphere. Yeah, exactly. So, but I think there's an element of having Gregor on tour. Well, he'll be able to say, or, you know, in the lead up to the tour, he'll be able to say and vouch for the Scotland players, not just as players, but their characters and all these things that are really important when you throw into a Lions tour mix.
Who's your money on to be the Fords coach? Because Borthwick, Farrell and Roundtree look like they're out of the running as well, don't they?
Yeah, from what I'm hearing, the Lions coaching team looks something like Gregor Townsend, probably as attack, Steve Tandy as defence coach, Robin McBride forwards, and the legend Neil Jenkins as kicking coach. I'll chuck in there Paul O'Connell, line out Norse. Unbelievable synergy with the Lions. Matt Proudfoot, scrum coach as well. He knows everything there is to know about the South Africans. And let's not forget, he was coach last time South Africa actually played a game, which was the World Cup final. So, yeah, a couple of other names in there. John Mitchell, potentially. I'd love to see Sean Edwards as the defence coach. That's never going to happen, though, I don't think. So while it looks like Townsend, Tandy, McBride and Jenkins as his extra coaches, a little bit deflated by that. I want to see Paulie O'Connell. Love to see Sean Edwards, even though it won't happen. But Matt Proudfoot, definitely. Imagine the intel that he's got into the South Africans.
Have we ruled out Scott Robinson?
Yeah, I think so.
I'd love him to go if I was going, because the guy is an absolute legend. He's a friend of mine. We had a dance-off once. He might not remember it, but I think about it every night. So I'd love to see him involved, but I doubt it. He'll be over in the UK, I reckon, soon coaching.
What did you guys make of the All-French quarterfinals on Sunday? No tries in either of the games?
Abysmal.
Oh my France.
I could barely even watch the first game. I could barely even watch it.
It was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah, Bordeaux-Racing, you're thinking, here we go, Jouet. I mean, I don't know whether to blame the players or blame Matt Carley, even though he had the impossible task. He should have just been like, fuck this, just let him go. Just let him play. It was absolutely dreadful. It's arguably one of the worst games I've ever seen. It was like, because you mentioned it last week about they obviously know each other really well, and you know, because it's a European Cup game, Heineken Champions Cup, that Racing will probably turn up because it's a big game. They've got history in the competition. It genuinely looked like they couldn't be asked, and it was just like, whatever. They looked like none of them knew the rules or the laws. None of them have studied the referee. Because one of the things you talk about, well, you talk about the highest level, is you study the referee. You'll get given a load of information on what he's big on, the breakdown.
Or Jim, maybe they don't in France because it's France.
Well, they clearly don't. That's what I mean. It was everything and anything. Like, around the breakdown, hands in, you're on your elbows, not 10 metres from the scrum or the line out. It was just like, it was absolutely dreadful.
And talking about it, you can actually now see, I can understand from those French two teams' perspective, Bordeaux and Racing, why they're doing that at the breakdown, why it is just lawless, effectively, at times. Because the French referees are so bad, and we say it on here regularly. The French referees just go, oh, play does not matter. And then the French teams get an English ref. And it does beg the question, and I know you have to have neutral referees in the Champions Cup, but when you've got two French teams, maybe just let a French ref have it, because then it might be a better game, because anything goes and it could be a bit better. Whereas Matt Carley's refereeing it the way World Rugby want him to referee the game, and the French are just playing a different game, aren't they? So it wasn't a great spectacle. You've seen Mathieu Reynal refereeing Exeter against Leinster and just letting anything go and penalising the wrong things here, there and everywhere. I felt a bit sorry for the Racing and Bordeaux boys because they're probably looking at Matt Carley going, what's he on about? Because they're used to the bang average French refs that have just been pulled off the street saying, actually, you'll do today. Here's a whistle. Have a dig. Whereas Matt Carley has refed it. For a viewer watching the game, you're following Matt Carley and going, he's dead right. Everything he's given, pretty much, is the right decision. Yet the French boys are like, well, this is not possible.
Austin Healey made the funniest comment I've ever heard in my life.
Go on.
So Racing had a penalty in front of the sticks to level it 21-all, which obviously would have put it into extra time. And he said, quote unquote, I've never in my life wanted someone to miss a kick so much. So Aribrahen puts the ball in front of the sticks. And he's saying that because, and it's like, you're thinking, oh, should a commentator be saying that? No, he's absolutely right.
Yeah,
who wanted 100%. To see extra time? It was like, so I know he got a bit of stick. There was a helicopter going over the stadium and that was kind of the highlight of the game as well. But, you don't want to go too hard because ultimately the lads are out there giving it the rule and there'll still be physical parts to that. But, you know, as an advert for the game compared to the Leinster Exeter and compared to some of the games we've seen this season in the Heineken Champions Cup and even in the Challenge Cup as well. But we know going into the semi-final that it could arguably look very different.
What were your thoughts on the Toulouse and Clermont game?
Better.
Yeah.
Slightly better, but just errors again. You know, Luke Pearce has... I mean, this is another weird thing, isn't it? Because Matt Carley didn't speak any French in his game, whereas Luke Pearce was, you know, spoke a bit like Borat throughout it. And fair play. You know
he
what?
Had a proper dig. Yeah, he did well.
He did, but not enough. Like, he's done it enough. And I know that, you know, both teams have got English-speaking players, but I just don't know how you can build that rapport as good as Luke Pearce is. Arguably, he's in the top three refs in the world, especially with the way the French teams play, of trying to have a conversation around. You know, it's all right contextualising like Mele and Touchavard and Je suis fatigué and Croissant and all these things in French, but trying to give context around the nitty-gritty of the game is really difficult. He did really well, he did, but maybe I'm just saying that because that game wasn't up to much either.
Yeah, I think the big difference for me was the set piece of Toulouse and their control at halfback. Again, Untermack I thought was really good at 10. Difference, Cami Lopez goes off after about 15 minutes, I think it was, he got a whack on the shoulder in a tackle that he felt was illegal, but looking at it, it wasn't. And those Arnold boys in the second row, they're hard.
Arnold. Parra. Morgan Parra, who's about 43 now.
Time's up.
I know. Well, not times up. You see his kick at goal. Oh, my word. Yeah. They had a chance to get back into it.
Yeah.
Obviously, took the kick at goal. They had a couple of minutes left on the clock. Easy to score a try, arguably, than the clock running down, trying to get a penalty kick from your own half. And he sent over a balloon. He sent over a balloon. We didn't even send it over. It went right.
Horrible.
Yeah, it was. And that was all she wrote.
Yeah. It makes you think they need a full clear out of that. A lot of players, a lot of the elder players there that have this kind of hangover. Think back to Clermont a few years ago. Again, Morgan Parra only had to take a penalty to kick it goal. And they'd have qualified, I think it was a home quarter final or something. And he tapped and went because he didn't know what the score was. And so you just think...
They've got an aging squad, haven't they? You look at, they've obviously got Thomas Lavanini, the Leicester second row, the Argentinian lad going over, but I'm not aware.
All my pens.
All my body, though. The guy is ripped to shreds. I don't know what's more important, that or pens. But anyway, that's all. When I think Thomas Lavanini, I think all my arms and all my bod. And now you've said it, all my pens, which is very true. I don't know. I don't know what the profile of that squad looks like going forward.
Well, should we have a look ahead to the semi-finals then? What do you make of the actual draw itself with Deleliano O'Driscoll? Are you a fan of having it like the FA Cup?
Did Dricker have the shakes when he's holding the balls up? He had the shakes a bit, and I don't know whether he needed a caffeine hit or something like that, or he was a bit nervous, but he was holding the balls up and they were shaking a little bit into the camera. So
the balls.
I liked it. It was, and talking about the Champions Cup now and how the format has been this year, and it's been kind of convoluted because of COVID and the effect of cancelling some games. Then they go, I love last 16 quarterfinal, I do as well. Semi-final, final. And I think you can, yeah, we're all talking about playing too much rugby. We're talking about too many games. I think you can manage the group stages by having four group games and then last 16. So you lose a game overall from the players, you know, season in terms of how many games they play. Because normally it's 9 games to win the Champions Cup. With 8 games, if you can play 4 group games and then last 16, quarters, semi and final, I think it's brilliant. So that's what I did enjoy. And yeah, the draw from Dricko and Lawrence, FA Cup style, just Dricko needs to work on his handshaking a little bit. Maybe he needs some more sugar. Get the star bar into you.
I don't know if he has star bars.
I don't think he does now.
La Rochelle, Leinster and Toulouse-Bordeaux, who do you see going through to the final?
It seems quite obvious that it'll be a Leinster-Toulouse final.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I do.
I don't think it's obvious because La Rochelle, the power game that they've got, and you only have to think back to what Saracens did to Leinster with their power game.
Very true. La Rochelle, I'm easily convinced. I'm easily manipulated, mate.
La Rochelle are a proper outfit, you know, across they the are. Board. I think Ohio West at 10 is perhaps a weak link and they can't decide between him and Jules Plisson sometimes. But Doulan at fullback, Bottier in the centre. You know, your back row, you've got Kevin Gourdon, Victor Vito and Gregory Aldrete.
Who's Aldrete?
Yeah, 3 brilliant players. So it'll be a hell of, I think that's a hell of a ding-dong. I think in terms of Toulouse-Bordeaux, Toulouse have got way too much for him. You know, especially at home, even though there might be fans, there might not be fans. But yeah, La Rochelle-Leinster's mouth-watering for me. Leinster are probably favourites, but La Rochelle, are, you know, they could beat anyone.
I just think Leinster, big team players, I think it's easier than you've maybe put there.
Well, no English teams left in the Champions Cup, but Leicester and Bath won in the Challenge Cup, and both are at home in the semi-final, so it could be an all-English final there.
Possibly.
Oh, I watched Bath, actually. How are Bath getting rid of Zach Mercer? Mental, anyway. Supporters getting political.
Yeah. Everyone's looking at it now going, oh, Bath and Leicester, they're the two favourites. But this ain't, you know, Leicester have improved massively, but they're playing Ulster.
Ulster are the favourites. The way they beat the Saints.
Yeah. Ulster are a proper team, you know, with internationals. You know, Leicester are coming good and they've got huge facets of their game now that will put Ulster under a lot of pressure. But yeah, it's not a foregone conclusion that Leicester beat Ulster by any means. And a lot of people will look at that as Ulster being favourites, as Jim just said. You know, Stockhorse back into a bit of form as well. Cooney, Bandwagon were on that. Jordy Murphy. They're a proper outfit. So that's a massive game. Again, Bath playing Montpellier. Which Montpellier team turn up? Philippe Saint-André, I saw him clapping in the stands. He was pretty happy, even though they only just sort of snuck past Benetton in the rain. I'll probably go in Bath. Nah, sod it. Let's go Montpellier against Ulster in the final. Jim, why are you being horrible?
I'm thinking Ulster-Bath.
Right, well, there you go. Let's finish things off with the good, the bad and the ugly then.
We'll start off in Northampton, Jim. Although they didn't win, Tommy Freeman, 2 tries on his European debut for Northampton. He looks pretty decent, but they did lose. Harry Potter, a couple of bits of magic to put Leicester Tigers into the semi-finals of the Challenge Cup, Jim. A bit of wizardry on the wing.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, something up his sleeve.
Hey, there we go, there we go. He gets a mention in the good. Ulster, they're going to get a mention as well. It might be the top tier of Europe, but it's their first European semi-final since 2012. And Cooney, Stockhorse, were on fire again. Great to see that. La Rochelle, they look pretty decent. 6 tries and a 45-21 thrashing of Sale to make it through to their first Champions Cup semi-final. Big tip of the slipper to them. They're a big team with some big boys, and they're going to be a big threat to the team that get the good this week. Jim, it's our favourite Irish team. I don't know, is it our favourite Irish team? It's one of our 2 favourite Irish teams.
Yeah, one of our 2 favourites, yeah.
Yeah, Leinster. Not many teams go to Sandy Park and win. They're looking good for a 5th European Champions Cup trophy. Phenomenal performances from Van der Fleer. Henshaw in the centre. I thought Reece Ruddock was outstanding. Byrne, when he came on at 10, was quality. James Lowe as well, I thought, was brilliant. So a proper top-tier performance by them, beating Exeter down at Sandy Park. So the good this week goes to Leinster.
Error.
The bad. A few bits of bad. The Rainbow Cup. You heard about this, Jim?
I have heard about this, yes.
Is it off? Is it on? Is it off? Is it on?
Not too sure, Andrew. Oh. Speculation. Speculation from the top of the tree. I'm involved in some commentary stuff for the Premier Sports over the Rainbow Cup. I'd love to see it happen. It always seemed difficult, but from what I'm hearing, it's still on, like Donkey Kong. But again, like we've said throughout this whole year, Andrew, who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? But I do hope it is on, because not only to see the South African teams come over here, get some game time potentially before a Lions tour, but also for a lot of the players in the Pro 14 clubs and provinces that need top-level rugby to stay in tune and highly tuned before the Lions tour gets announced, the squad and all that stuff. So it'd be a real shame if it does get canned, but I'm hearing that the Rainbow Cup could be canned. And it might not happen with the South African team. So it'll basically be just like the Pro 14 Cup or something. So we shall see. What else was bad? Well, we mentioned it earlier. We're just going to say France. Let's say it again, France. Bad.
I love France.
Well, I'm just talking about the teams, the games today, the referee.
Absolutely matching. Dreadful. Fair enough.
Bordeaux, Begler and Racing was possibly the worst knockout game of rugby anyone's ever watched. Clermont Toulouse was a bit better, but not great. Mathieu Reynal as a French referee, not so much. Thank goodness La Rochelle were pretty decent, because those two games on Sunday were bang average. What else was bad? Sale, unfortunately, going to have to get a mention of the bad, just the way they fell apart a little bit in the second half against La Rochelle. But for me, the bad, and it involves Sale, but it's not Sale. I'm going to give it to EPCR for making Sale have a 6-day turnaround after beating Scarlets away last weekend and having to travel to France in a knockout game. The bad this week has to go to whoever decided to give them a 6-day turnaround, say go and take on the biggest team in the tournament in La Rochelle away from home with their hamstrings sore as anything from last week. Just not on, really. So that's the bad for me. And the ugly. Not masses of ugly, really, apart from one absolute helmet who writes in a newspaper called The Times.
Unbelievable paper.
No, Stephen Jones. Saying that Hamish Watson can't go on the Lions tour because he's too small. He's just dominated the Six Nations, pal. What do you know? A real ugly piece, I thought, from Stephen Jones. But hey, he wants clickbait and he's got a bit from us. So, yeah, not having that. Stephen Jones, you get the ugly.
And Goody, you've got a shout out to finish off with, don't you?
Yeah, a big shout out to Craig Taliga, who's been in touch to say the new live show date is the same day as his wedding. Well, tell your Mrs. Sadie, cancel not so
it.
Much. Well, mate, cancelling is a bit harsh. Why are you being horrible, Jim? Just yeah, reschedule your
much,
wedding.
I'll be honest, it's a bit much. It's a live show, though. It's important.
We've not had a live show in over a year because of COVID and China. And we've rescheduled our live show and it coincides with your wedding day. Just postpone the wedding, mate. Sadie, she'll understand that live shows are way more important than weddings. But he's asking us to ask her to postpone it. So what are you thinking, Jim? Should we, Sadie, just have a, you know, he'll be nice to you. He'll, you know.
I was going to say bring her, but don't. I mean, you can bring her, obviously. Everyone's welcome, but I'm not too sure that he'll want you to come without being horrible.
He's postponed his stag as well, which is never a good thing. So do you know what? Your priority should be, one, live show. Postpone the wedding, come to the live show, get the stag in, and then have the wedding after the stag do, because no one's bothered about the wedding, just the stag.
Thanks, Goody. And Jim, while we've been recording the podcast, you've had some sad news come through, haven't you?
Yeah, I have actually, and it's a difficult one because my phone was pinging during doing the podcast that a former coach of mine, Massimo Catita, has passed away. And yeah, I'm heartbroken by that news. He was my scrum coach for Scotland, part of the forwards as well, part of our kind of team. And yeah, I'm absolutely gutted. Played for Italy, and the news has been confirmed. That's what I was just reading there as we were recording the podcast. And yeah, I'm heartbroken, to say the least. He was a legend. He helped with the Italy Explorer when I retired. So my thoughts obviously go out to all Massimo's family, friends, former teammates, and everyone who knew him. So big shout out from here and everyone on the pod, I'm sure.
Thanks, Jim. Sorry to hear that. Our thoughts are with you and, of course, with Massimo's family. And thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Rugby Pod. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and head over to Spotify, and we'll see you over there as well.
Rugby Pod.
Pod, pod, pod.